Our next guest, writer and co-founder of Defector.com. He's fully vaccinated, and we've been able to pull him away from filling up hefty bags with gasoline. David Roth joins us. Hello, David.
I'm doing all right. Thanks for giving my new investment venture a little boost. I've got all these sandwich bags that I'm selling for $5 a throw.
Well, those, if you use the Ziplocs, those are really good for holding gasoline, right?
So one of those things where, like, if it were a metaphor in a satirical novel about a country with brain worms, you'd be like, this is entirely too on the nose. Like, no one's putting gasoline in a garbage bag and then putting it in the back of their Hummer, and then their Hummer blows up. That's too much. Except for, like, that's already happened twice, like, in the last 24 hours that I know of.
Well, Carrie and I were just looking at a picture of a burned out Hummer that made it about maybe 50 yards from the gas pumps before it became engulfed in flames, and surprisingly in the state of Florida.
Yeah, it's weird. Usually it's kind of beating the odds. That's usually one of the look before you leap state, I think it says on their license plate.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, ain't that America? Well, there's so much to talk about this afternoon, but beyond gasoline, let's talk about a team that's on fire in its own way. Those New York Mets, they can't lose.
It helps to play the Orioles, but yes. But it really does help to play the Orioles. I can't recommend that enough. They had, just in the time since the in double play combination got into a fist fight in the dugout last Friday, they've been great. All it took was making up a weird lie about it. Everyone in the New York tabloid sports media getting upset that they've made up a weird lie about it. And then the whole team seems to have rallied around that.
Well, are you telling me the rat versus raccoon thing didn't actually happen?
Well, it's hard to say. The video is inconclusive. I do like that it's the sort of thing where, so that's a dumb story to make up. Like, it's a story a little kid would make up, and I love it for that. The fact that they then kept nudging it forward that, like, I think McNeil was like, I actually thought it was an opossum. So there's, like, they've created an entire, like, sort of cinematic universe around this stupid thing. And the only reason it was kept going, you know, for as long as it did, is that, like, everybody from, like, the New York Post and Newsday is still hopping mad about it somehow.
Is there a different feel as a close observer to this year's Mets team?
Not yet. I mean, like, I think as a close Mets observer is a very generous way to describe my mental state. Like, I'm a fan of a team that always makes me sad. And I think the roster looks good. I think the bullpen has been pitching unsustainably great. I mean, there's a lot of things about it that are good. The thing I will say is that I had a bunch of important players get off to really, really terrible starts. Francisco Lindor and Dom Smith both were just taking awful at-bats and super soft contact. And at some point, like, that was obviously going to even out because they're good major league hitters. It's just, you know, knowing that, and then watching those guys tap out to the pitcher three times in the game, it's like, it's sort of hard to have both of those in your head at the same time. So I know that what's happening now is just basically everybody sort of starting to play a little bit more like themselves. But you can hear me rationalizing in real time. I'm extremely excited about them. I'm just trying to be normal about it.
I thought of you a couple of weeks ago when they were playing the Red Sox, and particularly when the Sox scored one run early against Jacob DeGrom, and I thought, well, this one's over.
Yeah, that's somehow all it takes. Yeah, they haven't sorted that out yet. DeGrom's hurt, and we'll see what they're... I mean, that was about the low ebb of the series, of the season for me. Like, especially because I think at the time, like, the Red Sox actually have some really good arms in their bullpen and stuff like that, but there's, like... But watching that Garrett Whitlock guy, like, all I knew about him was that he was a Rule 5 pick, and watching him just absolutely tear apart the middle of the Mets lineup and without breaking a sweat, I was like, oh my, are they bad? Like, is everything that I've ever heard about Francisco Lindor, like, that's all a big prank? Like, it's actually just Unesky Betancourt with, like, a different haircut?
Oh, that's a guy. That's a guy right there. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a name that is often on the tip of my tongue. I had to write my little better remember a guy bit for the newsletter today at Defector, and I wrote about Eric Valent, who there's no reason why anybody would remember him. He was a Met. But I found myself really inspired by Billy Hamilton's futile chase for a hitting for the cycle yesterday. Like, there's really, this has been a very rich season for, like, guys having indelible moments that in otherwise completely delible careers. I was really hoping that would happen for him, but it didn't.
We're talking with David Roth on Dantem. Meantime, in the NBA, our Boston Celtics here in New England have suddenly morphed into what used to be the New York Knicks. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Jaylen Brown thing is not what you want, but, like, it's bizarre. Like, I have, for the most part, with my friends that are Celtics fans, like, they can be about the Celtics the way that I am about the Mets, and I've tried to be a voice of reason in their lives. It's not easy to reason with a Celtics fan, but for the most part, I've been like, you know, they're obviously good. Like, look at their roster, look at the coach, but they're not good right now, and I don't know 100% how they turn that around this season. I don't think that, like, it's time to move on from Stevens, or that it's time to, like, really, like, radically reimagine the roster. Like, there's enough good stuff there that I still feel like they're good. But, man, like, from one game to the next right now, they certainly are not. Well, what are you seeing with them? You're probably watching them more closely than me.
Yeah, I mean, they're frustrating because the talent is clearly there. And when we talk to the Boston media guys, because we only talk to the sane ones, not the crazies who are screaming that Red Auerbach never would have let this happen. Red would have put a cigar out on a guy's chin if he didn't work that out. That's the way they used to do it in my day. The guys we talk to say it's not that they don't care. It's not that they're selfish. It's that they don't, perhaps the Tatums and the Browns of the world, don't show their emotions as much. And for whatever reason, maybe it's their age, the losses don't seem to bother them as much. And as you know, here in the Northeast, that's what galls people more than anything else. You can play terrible, but if you clearly feel bad about it, they'll accept it. But it's when you look like, oh, well, I'm still getting paid, that's when they start to get upset.
It's bizarre. I think that honestly goes back to the same thing that we were talking about with Lindor and McNeil and the rat and the raccoon and the possibly opossum situation. That, like, with all that, it's like tone policing on top of everything else. That, like, the issue is not, like, whether something is, I mean, it matters whether the team is winning or losing. Obviously, people are happier when they're winning. But so much of it is about this sort of moving target idea of doing things the right way. And it just feels like you can't win at some point. I mean, obviously, you can win if your team is winning.
Right.
But otherwise, it's like there's not, like, a way to lose that anybody is going to cut you any slack on. It just sort of feels extra unfair in this regard.
The plus side of all this is, man, it's nice to be able to talk sports and real sports and see some people in the stands and to watch games and to care about it again, because last year I didn't care about any of it.
Same for me. It didn't feel right, you know? Like, I enjoyed watching the baseball postseason last year. Like, I've never quit on a baseball season like I did last year.
No.
Like, just once it became clear, you know, that, like, in basically when they shut down spring training, I was just like, you can't do it. And they were able to sort of have a season. Like, I thought, I liked watching the bubble games a little bit in the NBA, but there was still something about that where, I don't know, it just felt like the energy was wrong. The difference, I think, this year, I was talking to some coworkers about this, that, like, I can't think of a time when the general, like, energy level and vibe in baseball has been much more positive and sunny than it is in the NBA, and I do feel like that's where we are now. And I think it's just that maybe the NBA is, you know, they started when things were bad, things got worse, and, like, now that sort of things are getting better, everybody's just sort of, it's the end of a long season, everybody's over it, they didn't have enough rest.
Right.
Whereas with baseball, it's like it started when things were starting to get better, and then things have continued to get better. And so I've sort of, like, laid all of my, you know, sort of cautious optimism about the summer over the, you know, the sport itself, which is, you know, again, pretty incredible given that Lindor was hitting, like, 165 just a few days ago. But I was still able to do that.
Now, besides this, our other favorite spectator sport is to watch the gradual destruction of the country by our elected officials of all stripes. And let's start right in your neighborhood. How's that Andrew Yang campaign going?
Oh, boy. He is really, really something. So he's still polling at the top of the mayoral race, which is not what you want. The thing with him that's weird is that, like, so my initial impression of him, I think is what everybody's initial impression of him was, which is that, like, he's a nice guy, or probably a nice guy. No one really knows who he is or what he wants or whatever, but you start with a universal basic income, and then he seems like he's got a good attitude, and I'm like, all right, fine, give it to him. You know, like in a presidential like field where there's like 25 versions of John Delaney, like Joe Biden and like whatever, I'm like, yeah, all right, cool, like the smiling guy. He seems not to have any idea what being mayor of New York is. I guess if anyone did, they wouldn't run for it, because it seems like one of the very worst jobs in the world. But it's been really bizarre. Like, he's got two sort of modes in his campaign, and like one of which is like standing outside of a pizzeria and going, pizza, I love it. And then the other one is like issuing some sort of attempt at a political statement that falls incredibly flat, and then trying to sort of like apologize in a both sidesy way that also everybody hates. And so like all he can really do is just like show up at sporting events and be like, we love the sports, don't we? Like, that's like really the only qualification he's got. And like I said, he's winning. So I don't know where to go with it.
Now, on the other side of the country, and we know absolutely nothing about it here, but Carrie and I have been doing some, friendly wagering on whether in the California gubernatorial recall, whether or not Caitlyn Jenner will outperform the guy with the bear.
The guy with the bear really has, he's got a strong energy. That's, I believe, John Cox is his name.
Oh, I didn't even know his name. You're much more well-versed than I.
Well, I edited a story about him. We did a theme week last week, and it was, you know, he didn't fit within the theme of what we were doing at the website, but we, like, finally found that he'd had a failed senatorial campaign in his past. We were like, all right, good, yeah, get the, so, because we needed the bear on the site. Like, we're in the business of serving our readers' needs.
Yes.
And if this guy's going to, like, get in a bus with a bear, and then the best part about that was, so he held a rally with a bear to prove, it was never really clear what the point was. The bear, like, wandered off at some point, and then the next day, the media only wants to talk about the bear, not about my ideas. And it's like, first of all, you invited the bear. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't call it out of the crowd, like at a Trump rally where he'd be like, oh, that's Scott Baio, come up. Like, the bear was there on your behalf. Yeah, I think, honestly, like, I feel like he's ready. He'd be readier on day one than Caitlyn Jenner.
Well, like, I think the bear would be, too.
Coming out with the first messaging that she had about being like, I was at my private jet facility the other day, and like the guy that I have to yell at my butler for me told me that he's tired of seeing homeless people on the street. It was just, you could not have gotten more tone-deaf stuff into one sentence, like, without like having to, using the language of damp, I guess. But yeah. Like, it just, if you're only using words, I don't know how you could do better than she did.
I referred to that as her let them eat cake moment.
It really was, but it was like a let them eat cake moment that's also like everybody likes cake. Do you know what I mean? Like, the idea of being like, I'm at my private jet hangar, like, I'm just throwing my plane out because I've used it too many times, so I'm getting my new plane and we're taking it out of the box. Like, this is an experience that anyone has ever had. Like, it resonates with nobody. And the idea of, like, saying it in a really urgently pissed-off tone to Sean Hannity is just really, like, again, so on the nose. Like, it's a flaming Hummer with 5 gallons of gas in the back.
Now, the perfect politician for our times, you wrote about him on Defector.com, because he is so uniquely unqualified for the job, might make Tommy Tuberville the greatest living senator.
I love him. I love his work. He's... It's weird. I mean, there's obviously crazier people in the House.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's like a bunch of them. But that's kind of always the way it is. Like, Tuberville, like, there's only 100 senators, you know? And, like, he's this guy that's, like, he's never had a job that didn't involve, like, a booster giving him a suitcase full of money. Like, that's, like, 100% been his career. is various things to do with suitcases full of money. And now he's going to be the senior senator from Alabama when Richard Shelby retires, which is later this year. He doesn't seem to know anything about what the job is or what it involves. And, like, he basically, I think, believes that, like, the Senate is roughly as significant and roughly as accommodating to his whims as, like, I guess Lilly's last coaching gig was in the American Athletic Conference. So not one of the big ones.
Right.
Like a conference that has like Tulane in it.
And
that's basically the Senate to him.
I love that. And I love the fact, too, that your own congressman, I think his inspiration may lead to a new license plate that says Kentucky, the Moocher State.
How do you, gosh, that guy. So briefly, his name is Josh Gottheimer. He is a Democrat. He's the first Democrat ever to represent the district where I grew up, which was represented by a very nice Republican Congress lady who would come to our Little League parades every year when I was a kid. So I always liked her. And then it was represented by just a werewolf named Scott Garrett for a long time. Gottheimer beat him and then has basically governed exactly like him, except for like he's nice. But the tweet that he had that you're referring to, where he referred, it was basically all about that there's a tax that was rolled back during Trump that they're trying to sort of reimpose, a tax benefit that was basically for people in high tax, high service states are able to deduct the price of their home. So it works very well for people in the nice suburbs where I grew up. It's also like, it is completely inequitable and there's no justification for it on any terms beyond that. Somehow he's arguing on behalf of a tax that only benefits rich people. And then he somehow made it worse. Like, how do you take that untenable, unpleasant statement, and then somehow you're like, also, there's all these poor people in a state like Kentucky, which is extremely poor, by the way. Like, how did he even do it? I was mad at him, but I was kind of in awe of how much, again, as with Caitlyn Jenner, there's something really good about being able to get 10 pounds of unpleasantness into a 5-pound bag.
Well, because
let the pros do their thing.
Saying dopey things is the coin of the realm these days. You probably saw that, I think it was over the weekend, our former governor here in Maine, Paul LePage, put out a survey that essentially said, I'm here in Florida, and I like it. I like it a lot. I'm with my people. But if you want me to come back and run for governor again, can you let me know in this little poll before Ann and I commit and sell the condo?
Feeling so sad. I'm really missing home. I hope that everybody there misses me too.
Yeah.
What's weird? What's incredible? This has been, I think, like a lesson that I don't expect to really stick because our country's got a problem with bullies just in general. But like the lesson that Trump should have taught people is that like everybody that's like a big swaggering, ultra aggressive, like LePage type personality, all of those guys are like the wimpiest men that
yes.
our nation has ever
yes.
produced.
Oh, God, yes.
The idea that LePage can't, like, I mean, whatever. I guess, you know, you wouldn't want to relocate to Maine for no reason, right? Like, especially if you've lived there your entire life. Like, the idea that you need people to basically, like, kiss up to you so that you would consider leaving West Palm Beach. What were the results of the poll? Are people really clamoring to bring him back, get Maine open for business again?
I haven't seen the results. Have you, Kerry?
No, and they didn't respond to my email, which, you know, went a little bit off of their poll questions, but was discouraging say it nicely.
Suggest some other places he might want to move instead.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, progressively further south until he's extremely wet.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, good times here in America. David, it is always a pleasure for us to get together with you. Thanks, as always, for making a little time for us this afternoon, and we'll do it again before summer rolls along.
Right on. Back at you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, David. David Roth, defector.com.